Welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm Ramita Iyer, a research analyst at the Institute and your host for this episode. The European Union and India are currently negotiating a free trade agreement to strengthen their economic and strategic partnership. In the past year, 4 negotiating rounds have been conducted. The FTA is significant for both sides since the EU is India's third largest trading partner after the US and China and accounts for almost 11% of total Indian trade. India, on the other hand, is the EU's 10th largest trading partner, accounting for more than 2% of the EU's total trade in goods. Importantly, in the last decade, trade in goods between the EU and India has increased by about 30%, and with the presence of over 6,000 European companies in India, they directly provide more than 1.7 million jobs across a broad range of sectors. In the run-up to the 5th round of negotiations between the two sides, this episode looks at the background issues and implications of the India-EU FTA. I'm joined by Ms. Pallavi Bajaj, International Trade Policy Advisor and partner at T-Cube Consulting. Pallavi, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Ramita. It's nice to be here.
So in the summer of 2022, the European Union and India resumed negotiations for a free trade agreement to strengthen their economic partnership. The talks for an FTA, however, began several years ago, which ultimately failed in 2013 after 7 years of fruitless negotiations. Could you share the reasons for the stalling of the earlier negotiations as well as the factors behind its renewed focus?
We've been discussing and analyzing these reasons now for a decade from all angles. And I think what it really came down to is that talks did not succeed because both sides could not find agreement on what were then key issues on either side. Things like data security, services, Mode 4, the insurance sector FDI cap in India, and of course the usual suspects, auto, wine, dairy, and the long-standing gap of IP rights versus access to medicine. I think all of these continue to be substantial issues on both sides. There were substantial gaps then. And I think this is to be expected because that is the nature of FTA negotiations, no? They look like they're built on economics, but they're also built on interests of multiple stakeholder groups. And I think while issues may seem largely economic, there are many more layers and factors that impact them. And taking all that into account and finding a middle ground for two large economic entities like India and Europe is always hard. But I get a sense that this time around there's more of a strong political will. There's a different approach politically and administratively to the negotiations on both sides. And I think businesses are generally pushing harder to find that common ground and learn from the stalemate. So it may take time, but I think there might be an actual agreement this time.
So the next round of negotiations is scheduled for next month from 19th to 23rd June, and it'll be held in New Delhi. What are the key negotiating areas of focus?
I think one key negotiating area of focus might be the air conditioners because it's going to be super hot in Delhi. But no, like you said in your introduction, India and EU are natural and significant trade partners for each other, which means that I think anything that is trade will be on the table as it should be. They're expecting the agreement this time to be three-tiered or really a combination of agreements in three issues. So they're keeping trade, investment and geographical indications as parallel negotiations. And discussions include some more usual subjects like agricultural tariffs, services, manufacturing, but also other areas which will be interesting to follow. Public procurement, which is a market India has recently initiated access to with its last FTA. There's, of course, investment, which is an area of significance to EU businesses and one where India has recalibrated strategy based on past experiences. So that should definitely be interesting to follow, especially on dispute settlement and the balance between investors' concerns and policy space. Then there's TSD, trade and sustainable development issues, environment, labor, etc. Services, which is obviously going to be a very important sector in that discussion. And I think there, while Mode 4 remains complex, I think how Mode 1 progresses will probably be more interesting to watch. So, of course, digital, data, e-commerce. Then there's renewables, which is going to be an important discussion topic for both sides. and defense cooperation, which I think already is joint production, tech cooperation in that area, etc. And the thing is, these are all issues that go beyond just commerce. You know, they're into deeper economic cooperation. And this is why I think that it will be important to remember for both sides that there are benefits that might not be immediately visible in equal measure to both sides, irrespective of the balance of trade at the moment, because I know you also alluded to the balance of trade at the moment in your introductory remarks. And the fact that there is this ongoing restructuring of the global economic balance in context of everything that has happened in the last few years. And that context will be very important in this agreement. So again, issues like public procurement, investment, TST, services, particularly Mode 1, and everything else that isn't immediately just economics, I think will be the more interesting issues to follow.
So despite the renewed rigor in the negotiations now, there are still significant issues and points of contention between both sides. What are some of the broad challenges that you foresee in the coming months?
Like I said earlier, some old and some new issues, really. There's Mode 4. It's extremely important to India on services for market access to the EU as a bloc. And in the EU, it's the mandate of sovereign matter members in the European Union. So that always makes it hard to negotiate for the EU. There's TSD, and within it, environment in particular. That and then the impact of the carbon border adjustment mechanism and the Green Deal on deforestation that were recently announced. I think Indian experts and negotiators have already expressed their thoughts on the impact of such unilateral regulation in the middle of negotiations, and India's position on binding commitments and FTAs in this regard in general. On the other hand, EU has made its position with the carbon border adjustment mechanism very clear with its announcement and also signaled that it's here to stay. So I think that will definitely be something that will take a longer discussion. Labor, investment, like I said earlier, especially on dispute settlement, investor state, India has had its hands burnt and is generally looking more seriously at the balance between business concerns and policy space, so that will be tough to negotiate. Digital and data security. This is critical for both sides. There's very little regulatory common ground and very high significant common areas of interest and potential for cross-fertilization. So this will be challenging, but potentially one of the bigger outcomes if they can agree on something. And of course, other than that, there's always the issues that continue on tariffs on auto, spirits and wines, both hard areas for India to negotiate on. I think on auto, there may be a midway of cross-fertilized interests, particularly with the recent restructuring of value chains and, you know, Europe looking at restructuring its Asian engagements. But this will be down to the ability of negotiators and their advisors to engage with industry, because there is a lot of interest from industry in this area. And if we do our stakeholder engagement well, I think we may be able to find a midway here. Wines and spirits is going to be complex. There is a labyrinth of complexities on the Indian side in this, various levels, economic, social, administrative, all kinds. And it's not just about revenues from alcohol tariffs for India. So I will be surprised if this was an easy gift for India, because I don't think it can be. And of course, there is the long-running conflict between IP right protection and access to medicines. Again, India has indicated time and time again that its focus is going to be on the latter, on access to medicines. And in COVID, this has stood India in good stead. So there will be a need to balance between business interests and welfare here, which is never easy to navigate, but I think that's not impossible either. The area that I think is not going to be a point of disagreement but will be challenging anyway is MSMEs. It's an important issue right now, particularly with, you know, digital being driven by small businesses. I would love to see more than lip service in this regard, which is always challenging to achieve but necessary. And I think it will be interesting to see, though there will not be much disagreement, but there are definitions and standards that differ between the two countries. And I think the challenge here will be coming up with a framework that actually has an impact on MSME concerns and on effective inclusion between two partners where even the definition of MSMEs is not aligned. So I think that might be challenging, but an important outcome again.
So I want to focus on a couple of things that you mentioned. The first is on data security. So both sides established a trade and technology council to lead on issues pertaining to digital transformation, green technologies and trade. There's also a certain expectation that talks on data security within the FTA will be channelized through this council. What are your thoughts on how this will unfold? And you did mention earlier that, you know, there's very little common ground on data issues between the EU and India. But what really are the conditions in which they can achieve some fruitful outcome, especially given that there was a data protection bill in India that was withdrawn last year from the parliament?
Right, so digital and data, this is my favorite subject. Very complex, but extremely critical to work on, like I keep saying. Digital in general and data security from that point of view in particular. The thing that both sides, I think, need to keep in mind here is kind of what they were going for with the council that you mentioned earlier. They set up a technical cooperation initiative because they recognize this. Digital is how we trade now. Every economy is building its own digital infrastructure, its own skills to enable easier, more secure data transfer and digital transactions. And the key word here really will be enable. If the frameworks that the two sides agree on enable easier, more secure data transfer and digital transactions and not just look to restrict and regulate them, we'll find a functional, enforceable agreement. And that's not actually as difficult to find as we seem to think. I think the catch is the differences on regulation between the two partners. And the solution to close that gap will be to not focus on it so much. So I was actually, it's interesting, this morning on Twitter, someone was saying that economic policy might be that, trade policy might be that one economic concept where you refuse market access to everyone while also demanding it from everyone else. And I think on digital, that's really what's happening across the world right now. You know, the EU has an interesting position. On the one hand, it seeks unrestricted cross-border flow of data, including addressing data localization. On the other hand, there is the very restrictive GDPR, a framework that has been announced and implemented already over 5 years. It's been tested with businesses, and Indian businesses have continuously contended, especially small businesses, that it restricts their ability to provide services into the EU, which is compounded by the fact that the EU has not provided India the status of a data secure nation yet. So it's obviously challenging from the Indian point of view. From the EU point of view, India needs more access to the EU market, but its own regulatory framework for data and for digital is, like you said, still work in progress. So finding common ground where no regulatory framework exists already is obviously complex. But the thing is, India has recently had a strong focus on leveraging technology for service delivery. And it has been working on creating an enabling ecosystem for digital trade, which leverages data, especially for small businesses and startups. And in this space, the government has pushed various initiatives that I think are adding up to one large, collectively secure, robust, inclusive, trust-based digital ecosystem, while working out in parallel how regulation can aid that process. So things like the ONDC or the OCEN for enabling access to finance, UPI, which has really revolutionized in India transactions from the smallest vendor to the largest mall, eKYC, which adds that layer of security, and then linking it back to the national ID. So I think they're slowly building, really leveraging digital platforms for service delivery. And therefore, from the Indian point of view, it's going to be looking to foster regulatory frameworks that enable and not restrict such a massive and inclusive framework, while allowing India to leverage its large wealth of data, because it's a big market, to foster innovation. And this is going to need time. It's going to need deeper stakeholder engagement to develop and to implement. So really, the key for the EU in this process is that it should seek to be a trusted partner in the process, because there is a lot the EU can offer to India here, but also a lot that EU can learn from the process and then benefit from the outcome. So I think it's really going to boil down to collaboration and cooperation as opposed to trying to regulate and make it mostly economic. I think it's going to have to be more capacity building, more technical cooperation, and then at the same time working with India to also simultaneously seek alignment with its own data security frameworks. Because I keep saying this, you can have as much regulation as you want on any subject, but if businesses in your partner economy are unable to comply with it, then that regulation is useless. Then it's a choice between doing business with a partner or not. And within digital, that's really not an option, because every digital transaction transcends multiple geographies naturally. So really working together on technical cooperation and capacity building is not just your good deed for the day anymore or balancing policy anymore. It's It's like I was also arguing in a recent policy brief I did with the Commonwealth Secretariat that it's just good economics, collaboration, cooperation, technical cooperation and capacity building with key trading partners. And really, collaboration and cooperation, I keep pivoting back to that. Because in digital, it's a little different from trade policy in other areas where you do your thing, I do mine, and we meet in the middle and find common ground. In digital, you need to first meet in the middle, find common ground that works across the life cycle of digital transactions, and then work across, and also is enforceable across the life cycle of digital transactions, and then work across that to take it back and build into your domestic frameworks. And the good news is that it's not hard to find those common grounds because of these reasons. So digital will be complex, but I think if you focus on knowing that we have to do this together, this is not something you do you and I do me and then we meet, then this is actually something that we can find a really solid structural resolution on, which could actually provide a good example for everyone, because everyone across the world is struggling with finding common ground on digital. So I think India and you have a real opportunity here.
Moving on to another issue that you raised on the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, or CBAM in short. Earlier this year, the Joint Secretary in India's Department of Commerce expressed Delhi's concerns over the EU's announcement of imposing a carbon tax, saying that such measures would require it to recalibrate the approach towards the FTA negotiations. So India seems to be viewing the new measures as a protectionist tool rather than as a global climate change intervention. Could you throw some light on India's concerns?
Yes. So CBAM is, as I was saying, a hot topic in trade circles right now. I keep hearing about it from several colleagues across countries, and no one seems to be happy about it. Everyone has expressed their reservations. I think Brazil expressed its reservations. The US did. India certainly did, like you said. I think it was twofold for India. One being that the measure actually impacts five or six key sectors of significance to India, and it does so with quite deeply. And the other is that when you're in the middle of a negotiation, if unilateral measures like this keep coming up, it's like you said, India needs to keep recalibrating its approach to the FTA every single time. And that always complicates what is already quite a complex negotiation, which has quite a history behind it. The issue on sustainable development issues is that there's no denying that both sides are serious about it. But the approach to working on it needs to be realistic, and it needs to require two sides working together with an acknowledgement of, as I was saying earlier, history of industrialization, which comes up also on at the WTO and on several other fora. There is also goals of both sides to be considered. There are legitimate issues of protecting the environment which remain at stake. But it is an FTA, and therefore, in the context of all of these things, it is important to keep the focus on commerce. And from that standpoint, I think EU's specific interest in this area is addressing renewable energy and alternative energy and a transition to the low-emission economy, including through trade and environmental goods and services, which is a growing industry segment within EU businesses. And they will seek access to the Indian market and its growing demand. Within that context, when there are measures like CBAM and the Green Deal to consider, or the Green Deal being on deforestation, that always complicates things for India, because India is going into this with a full impact assessment. We have a growing demand for renewable energy and alternative energy sources. The government has laid out plans for transition to a low-emission economy, but supported by domestic players. And I think this comes back to dependencies and vulnerabilities in critical sectors. India will be reluctant to take on commitments that hinder progress of domestic capacity in this regard, and commitments that will act as more restrictive barriers to trade than necessary, which I think, like I was saying earlier, has been the opinion of most countries in their response to the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, that it is more trade restrictive than necessary. So that will definitely weigh on the negotiations, but if I think that in the context of all the sensitivities, I think they can find a way to keep it specific to commerce and take it forward.
So there's a sense that both sides are planning to conclude an FTA by late 2023 or early 2024. Given this, what are your expectations? And do you also see the possibility of an interim agreement being signed?
Right. So will there be a deal by end 2023? I'm not sure. I think there is still a lot that is open and needs to be discussed. It really boils down to how the next round goes, but I don't see 2023 end realistically with a full deal. Therefore, will there be an interim deal? I think business is wanted. I think administration is pushing for a full deal. But in this situation, maybe businesses will win and we'll get at least the low-hanging fruit and the immediate areas of concern, because things like renewable and defense cooperation, I don't think either of them are looking to put off for very long. The thing with FTAs is, as I was saying earlier, that they can be typically and largely about commerce. So really the focus is always market access, and that's mostly what negotiators are discussing. But between India and EU, given everything that's going on in the world, all the geopolitical and other developments, at this point an agreement on trade between India and EU, as we can also see from the sectors being discussed, cannot just be about market size or market access anymore. There has to be a deeper economic and geopolitical cooperation that will have to be a key outcome. Tech cooperation, innovation, R&D, digital, sustainability that is by definition built on inclusiveness. And those outcomes, I don't think the two sides are looking to put off anymore. From the EU perspective, because it's also going to be one of its first agreements with an emerging economy, it is also seen as a tool to restructure, as I was saying earlier, its Asian engagement overall. Also, India has a growth story right now that is progressing rapidly under the existing administration. And as a key partner, especially on tech and innovation in India, which has a big thrust right now, the EU does have a lot to benefit from being a partner in this growth story. So from the Indian point of view, like you were saying earlier, EU is India's third largest trade partner. It is also a very key partner in tech and innovation. And that is an important space right now where India has taken large strides in-house as well as in cooperation with key partners, particularly Germany and France more recently. So the exchange of expertise is being seen in India increasingly as more two-way. And I think that is key in all of India's agreements right now. The pattern, the mindset, the expectation is entirely different. There is a greater push on innovation and domestic capacity. And via that, there is a recognition of what India really brings to the table, the India of today. And that is so much more than just market access, which is why, again, the pace at which this negotiation concludes is going to be extremely important, because you don't want to lose momentum when there is a match of mindsets on the two sides. In India, I think what is also happening right now is that there is a big push on what we keep talking about, what we call Vasudev Kutumbakam, which is, you know, everybody just grows better together. And that's not an ideology. It is also the basis of our engagement on all key FTAs in the last few years. And based on this and its relevance for today, given everything again that's happening in the world with COVID and all other geopolitical developments, the nature of cross-fertilization of capacities that India is seeking to address through these FTAs, and I think there's a recognition of this on the EU side as well, and also the EU is seeking to, you know, address the same cross-fertilization of capacities with India, and this is extremely important. So for me, the timeline of negotiation of the FTA is impacted by the fact that this isn't just about market access anymore. And there is an increasingly more natural partnership between India and EU developing on key non-trade areas as well, like I said, defense cooperation and tech and innovation. So to this end, I think they will be looking at wrapping this negotiation up quickly. Again, I still don't see how it's going to happen by the end of this year, but who knows? These two economic blocks in general, India and the EU, have proven that they have the capacity over the last few years to do everything very quickly if they really want to. So who knows where June will take us. I think two things that they probably should focus on is, like I said, mode one. It's going to be extremely important and is going to impact stakeholder interests greatly. So that if they can focus on that, then that will be really useful. Agricultural supply chains, I know this is extremely controversial, but they have been restructured owing to, like I said, all the various developments or events globally. And while this is complex, it is one where, with sensitivity to domestic priorities on both sides, there can be avenues of leveraging considered cooperation without compromising food security and policy space in terms of minimizing dependencies and vulnerabilities. And this is true across all key sectors. I think if they can even get these two, and these two are hard areas, but if even these two can be looked at with consideration, then that will already be a good outcome in the immediate run. I think it will be important to make sure that the agreed rules are enforceable. That is my expectation. Make sure that the agreed upon rules are enforceable, because what good are they if they are not? You can have this massive FTA that takes 10 years to negotiate and then come up with an outcome that is useless to businesses because it's not enforceable, because not enough common ground was found or not enough harmonization and definitions and standards was done, especially as trade becomes more digital and cross-jurisdictional. I think that will be important. And of course, finally, working on the deal with the long run in mind. I keep saying this, more cooperation for facilitation and less regulatory restrictions. I think if that would happen, that would be a good match of expectations. And if we do it right at this point in the world, I think it will serve as a model or a tool for more effective engagement at the multilateral level too, where India and EU are two big players that can lead the way on reforms and restructuring of a system that should be working for all members, but at the moment is struggling to work for any. So there is more riding on this agreement than just market access. And if we do it right, we'll be doing it right for a lot of our other trade partners or just general economic restructuring across the globe now. And that's extremely important to keep in mind, both in terms of pace and outcome.
Pallavi, thank you so much for being on the podcast. You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates from social media. We're on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.